So I need to help create any edge I can get. And sound, I can always hear everything. I've said this multiple times, like, you know, my eyes deceive me, my ears never do.
Welcome to The Sound Trader, a podcast where we explore how real traders are using audio and other sensors to navigate the complex and dynamic world of financial markets. I'm your host, Graham, and I've spent years developing audio tools for traders that transform market data into intuitive sound patterns, technically known as market sonification. On this show, you'll hear from traders at every stage in their trading journey, from those just beginning to experiment with audio signals, to veterans who have been fine-tuning their sensory approach for decades. In today's episode, I'm thrilled to be speaking with Jeff, known online as Two-Year Flipper, a seasoned professional trader, a member of the Chicago Board of Trade, with decades of experience primarily trading fixed income markets. Jeff has been one of the most vocal advocates for incorporating sound into trading processes, having evolved his approach from his days on the trading floor, where the roar of the pits provided valuable market information. You'll hear how Jeff uses custom sound alerts to monitor order flow in bond markets, the specific levels he listens for, and why he believes, "My eyes deceive me, my ears never do." Jeff also shares insights to his trading journey, from his early days scalping the 2-year notes to his current approach to the 30-year bond market, along with valuable advice for new traders on everything from prop shops, developing your process, and market selection. Whether you're looking to develop your edge, fine-tune your approach, or are simply curious about different ways to engage with the markets, I believe Jeff's experiences will offer you valuable insights. So let's dive in and discover how the sound of the market might be the missing dimension in your trading toolkit. We've got Jeff, aka 2-Year Flipper, on the line here, and I'm pretty grateful that we've managed to pin you down, because I understand you've got a pretty hectic lifestyle. Were you trading today amongst all of that chaos I heard about?
I don't not trade any particular day. I was trading today. I've been the last month and a half, I've been slowing up on trading. Summers are difficult in our family. We have 7 kids, so there isn't a weekend from here until, God, I think after the 4th of July that we're not away for the weekend. Either my wife or I are away. And, I mean, we're going in the middle of June. We're traveling from Chicago all the way out east to New York, basically. Flipping around by Saturday, and then on Saturday leaving, we're driving down to Destin, Florida. So I've got about just that week alone, I'll probably log 100 hours behind the wheel from June 9th to June 20th. So those weeks I won't be trading at all.
How many do you take many weeks off over the summer, like a lot of traders do in the U.S.?
Yeah, I used to never take days off. When my kids were younger, probably from, we'll get into it, but I had different legs of my career, different stages. But I want to say from 2010 to probably 2018, other than family vacations and Disney and stuff, I did not take days off. And to say how pathetic and how addicted to the screens I were, we would go to Disney and I would wake up early in the morning and I would trade early in the morning. I would do the U.S. Open, which, the bond open at 7:20. So I would trade like the first 10 minutes. We would leave, go to the parks, and then I would come back for the closes, because I figured I was making enough money during those times to basically pay for the vacation, even though I wasn't actively in front of the screen, you know, all day. I could still make enough money then, but there was different markets, you know, that was during ZIRP for the most part, you know, and the 2 year was a much different market than it is today.
That sort of lifestyle though, and that commitment to turning up every day, over the years, I've noticed that it's pretty much a prerequisite for success to at least show up every day. I mean, that's what being a professional is all about. Would you agree with that?
Sure. I mean, the way I always thought about it, you never know. My brother's a trader as well. And we always had a running joke. We pretty much trade the same markets. We always had a running joke, like, if one of us was going to take a bathroom break, let the other one know, because undoubtedly, whenever one of us left, something happened in that, you know, 3 to 5 minutes that we were gone. I mean, it was uncanny how often that happened. You know, that, and again, you know, these were different environments. I was very big into the Fed funds and the 2 year from 2010 to 2018. Actually, those were my only markets from 2010 to 2018. Were the 2 year in the Fed funds. And, you know, those markets were different, being the K algo and the A algo. So a lot of the time you had to be in front of the screen because you never knew when somebody was going to execute an order to get you out where I could use my inventory to over, you know, to quote, to get the pieces of the legs I needed to get me out of positions.
Would you say that you're spreading the market? Well, in those days, were you predominantly spreading the market so you had legs to manage, or you trade outrights a lot?
I was scalping. The idea was the 2 year I always scalped unless I did, even if I spread it against the tens, because that was the trade I would do back in, So from 2010 to probably 2012, I did the 10 spread, which was the euro dollar versus the 2 year, obviously. Which obviously does not exist anymore. And then I ventured back to probably the twos versus the tens was my favorite spread. But I never really spread for a position. Like, I didn't want to hold them multiple days, multiple hours. I was scalping it. So basically, if I got the edge on, say, 102-year, I would go, okay, I got 102-year on. What do I think the market's going to do right now? And now I'm looking at like 17 different markets when I'm trading the 2 year. Wasn't that complicated, but I'm looking at a lot of markets when I'm trading this and I'm like, wait, we're going down here. So I'm going to sell 50 10 year because I think I'm going to have to scratch the 2 year and I want to make on the tens at least half of what I was going to make in the 2 year. So I would make, my ratios were never proper. There were times, like, for instance, in that exact example, I would probably have sold 100 10-year because if I made 100 ticks in the 10-year, that was the same as what the 2 years were at the time. They were both worth 15, 62, 50. So if I got the edge in the twos, I would just lay them off in the tens. And that's only if I didn't think the twos were going to work out. If I thought I had the edge in the twos and I was going to make on them, I wouldn't hedge at all. I would just outright scalp the twos. That was always priority one.
Scalping the twos. Yeah.
The twos was priority one.
Thus the 2 year flipper. And how we managed to meet through the X platform, I guess, is throughout the last few years, not many people are as vocal as you have been about incorporating sound into your process. So perhaps could you tell us a little bit about how you first started leaning on sound?
Sure. So I guess initially sound came from just me being on the floor. And I used to sit above the 2-5 options pit. So if the 2-5 options pit got really loud, even if I didn't hear the order, forget I hear if an order came in or not. If I heard the 2-5 options pit get really loud, I would just assume the screen was going to get busy because people were going to have to hedge stuff. And so that's how sound first was incorporated into any of my trading. You know, you could hear the roar of the floor. So the louder the floor was, you know, the more busy the floor was. So, you know, I just gradually adapted. I'm like, okay. And what was happening, what I realized is, you know, back in 2010, my eyesight was phenomenal. I've always had 20/10 vision. I've had great vision throughout my life. But as you get older, you know, once I hit 40, you know, my dad had mentioned to me, he's like, you know, you probably throw on a 0.25 reader to read the screen clearer. And I'm like, I don't need glasses. I see it perfectly clear. And, you know, son of a gun, we put on those glasses and I'm like, oh my God, it was like crystal clear again. You know, I didn't realize it was a little fuzzy. So it was kind of a combination of those two things, the roar of the floor and then putting on readers. I'm like, well, wait, what can I do to help me gain another edge? And I'm like, well, wait, if I'm looking at 17 markets or 15 markets, how many ever I was looking at the time, just the basis decision in the 2 year, well, your eyes can't look at all of those markets at one time. It's impossible. You know, I could group three Eurodollar, like the red Eurodollars together. I could group, you know, three Fed funds together. I could group the fives, tens, thirties together. So, you know, there's nine markets and then the cash markets. So I had everything grouped. I knew where to look. But at the same time, your eyes don't see everything. So I just started messing around with sounds.
Have you consistently been using the TT platform for that?
Yeah, I started using TT in 1998. And I mean, I have to be one of the longer customers that, you know, they've had. I mean, it's, what are we in 2025 now? 27 years I've used TT. I mean, yeah. I mean,
wow.
Figure on average 1,000 a month. Hey, I mean, now I'm over 1,000, but for many years I just used the regular X Trader, and that was only like 750 a month. But, you know, 1,000 a month over 27 years, it adds up.
Yeah, I hope you get a VIP support.
Yeah, they don't do them. No. That's okay.
So you're monitoring at some point over a dozen markets. So you've got trade alerts set up in each of those to cue you in to what's happening?
No. So actually, my use of sound first started in the Fed funds. I actually did not use it in the 2 year. I used it in the Fed funds because what I was finding happening in the Fed funds is I didn't, because it's an algo, and the Fed funds are a straight A algo allocation. So that means assuming it's nobody's market here. If it's nobody's market and somebody sells 100 lot, you know, let's just say there's 10,000 on the bid. And, you know, let's just say there are 10 people with 1,000 each on the bid. Okay, to make everything simple, somebody sells 100 lot, everyone's going to get 10. Every participant is going to get 10 contracts. It's equal. Well, now that makes sense because 100 lot I'm interested in. I'm interested in 100 lot. I'm not interested in a one lot going through because only the person who has the biggest order is going to get the one lot. I'm leaving a few things out of this for right now. We're assuming it's not anybody's market. I'm trying to keep that part simple right now. So if somebody sells 100 lot, well, what I found was happening in the Fed funds at that time is if somebody sold 100 in May, 10 seconds later, they're going to sell 100 in June. 10 seconds later, they're going to sell 100 in July. So now I'm like, well, wait a second. What I figured out with my eyes is I'm like, look, I know this is happening. If somebody sells 100 lot, they're going to go to the next. Now, it didn't necessarily mean I wanted to buy June. It might have been selling June into a bad price. And then maybe, but they were going to sell July into a, you know, a meaty bid. You know, like there was 25,000 on the bid. And I'm like, hey, if I quote this, I know I can get like 40 contracts. And that's a free $800 for me. So it was my eyes that initially did it. And then I'm like, well, wait a second. Then I just started researching, you know, day after day. I'm like, well, wait a second. How many times does this order go through, you know, per week? I'm missing too many of them because my main focus was on the 2 year. you know, scalping the 2-year, and I was missing a lot of things in the Fed funds. So I'm like, well, I can't miss the Fed funds. So then I figured out, well, what's of interest to me in the Fed funds? Well, in the Fed funds, I wanted 25 or more contracts. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to create a sound on TT. And every time a sell comes down, it's a higher pitch. And every time a buy comes, 25 or more, it was a deeper, like monotone kind of, you know. So I had just had different tones for it. So higher pitches, I knew it was sells, and then the buys were, you know, deeper monotones, whatever they. You, and then I'm like, okay, so now how do I even gain more knowledge out of it? Well, then you could adjust, like, hey, it goes on for 1 second, 25 to 99, and it goes on for 2 seconds, 100 to a, you know, 249. I remember doing it. You know, in the beginning, I wasn't as specific as I am now. They had much bigger ranges. I think I just started out with 3 ranges. I think I did 25 to 100, 101 to 499, and 500 and above. So as soon as I heard one, then I knew my eyes would, then my eyes can then focus exactly where it was. And I just knew I was looking for sells. Like if I heard the high pitch, I knew I was going to look for sells in the Fed funds. So I had a separate TT window just for time and sales for the funds. So unlike the 2-year, I didn't individualize. Like the 2-year was individualized on the time and sales. But when I was trading the Fed funds, I used to lop all the markets together. So I would have the whole curve January all the way, you know, so there'd be like the funds never really traded more than 15 months. And I probably wasn't interested in like the first 2 months, you know, the 2 front months, I was never interested in trading those. I was interested in, you know, months 3 all the way through 14, let's say. So then I knew where to look on the screen, like, oh, there, that was a 250 lot. Okay. They did it in August. 50 in September or October. And that's how the sound came about for me.
So how has that evolved to today's markets where you monitor, for example, the 25 lots, 50s, 100 lots?
Sure.
So, and so forth. And that's a lot of resolution for alerts. So what exactly are you requiring such specific size levels for?
So it's just experience over the years. Like I'm trying to create some sort of edge for me, and you know, edges come every way. I feel sound gives me an edge. Why do I think sound gives me an edge? Well, I've been in front of a TT screen for 27 years now. It's just over the course of my career, I've learned specific things I'm looking for in the market. So everything changes, but there's a lot of stuff that's similar. So I typically know if I see a 25 lot buyer, I know through experience that this 25 lot guy is going to come in and he's not just going to do one order. He's going to do like 18 orders. And how do I, just being in front of the screen that long, I know he's going to execute, let's just say 25 lots between, if he starts at 145 and he's going to be done at 150. So I know for the next 5 minutes, there's going to be 25 lots being sold.
And you've got a similar strategy around the other size components. So you're using this to primarily drive what we've heard about with the timers that you monitor.
Right. My strategy is very specific to fixed income. I'm sure you can trade with sound in ES and NQ. I wouldn't know what those levels are, but I'm sure there's levels there that would help people. You know, for fixed income, my main focus is only on the 30-year ZB. I'll dabble in the 10-year Ultras, but I don't have sound on the 10-year Ultra because I'm not really interested in the sounds. I'm specifically interested in sound for the 30-year. And my sound levels are, they change from time to time. If a 20 lot trades in the bonds, I hear sound on it. 20 and above, I hear sound on it. And so you can imagine in my ear all day, it's kind, at times it sounds like a pinball machine.
I'm very familiar with it.
Right. But believe it or not, every one of those sounds, I can register those sounds, not in a fast market. In a fast market, you know, it's irrelevant. I couldn't, you know, I say this all the time, and, you know, people think I'm joking about it sometimes. But if just a normal day, let's just take a day like today, where the bonds, you know, only have like a 25 tick range, 28 tick range, whatever it was today, wasn't that big. And you say, okay, Jeff, you can look at the market right now. And I look at the market and I see it's 12 bid at 13. And it doesn't matter, it's even up. And say, close your eyes and you can only listen to sounds for the next 10 minutes. 10 minutes from now, I'll be able to tell you right about exactly what we're trading just by listening to sound.
Let's elaborate on that a bit. So you are forming a bias. You know, you're pretty confident where the market's going to go.
No, it's just hearing, it's just actually listening to the orders going through the market. I get a feel for, you know, with my eyes closed, I could say, hey, based on what I heard, we're at 12 right now. And then, you know, then you're just listening. I'm like, okay, now it's 11, 12. Now my eyes are still closed. Obviously, I'm not trading this. This is just like silly little things I do to keep me occupied during the day when the market's not busy. And I'll just listen to the sound of the orders clipping the book. Now, obviously, I can't do this in a fast market. The sounds wouldn't make a difference. You know, it's not like this magic trick I can do in any market at any time. No, it's specific to the bonds when it's not trading fast. If the bonds are trading fast, come on, I could listen, but I'm not going to be anywhere near what the market is, you know, after a CPI number. Yeah, okay, like I know where it's going to be. And it's not, it's just more for me on market awareness. It's not, I don't make any specific money off of that. It's just something I like doing, you know, to challenge myself, even though I don't really make any money during it. And inevitably, when I do that and my eyes are closed, I usually miss a trade. And then I just get pissed off because I'm doing something stupid. But I, you know, over the years, it's just something I've learned. I've kind of honed into the, like, I just feel like it helps keep me in tune with the market on what's going on.
Are you doing something similar in other commodities, soybeans? I know you look at corn. Are there any sounds that you've got enabled in those markets?
I do have some sound in corn and beans. Nothing really specific. More in corn. I'm not as interested in soybeans because soybeans, yeah, it's a thinner market. Soybeans does not move as fast as the ES or NQ. With that said, they move significantly faster than the 30-year bond and, the 10-year ultra, and definitely faster than corn. No, when I listen for sound now, I'm listening for specific things. Like I'm trying to get information out of it. And the information is, I just want to hear the order flow. So I hear order flow, like how many 25 lots and above are being sold? Oh my God. So we just went that minute in the bonds. Doesn't matter what the market is. And I heard 14 sell orders, 25 or higher. And I only heard 5 bond orders, you know, of the same size. And then the next minute I hear the same thing. Say it's about the same ratio, 14 to 5. Well, now I'm going to say, okay, like, wow, somebody's really selling the market. How is the market responding right now? Is the market going up or down? Like, are they being absorbed? So is there an iceberg on the bid? Or are they just rifling it through 25, 25, 25, and the market's going down like 7 or 8 ticks? You know, something along those lines. So it's really for information for me, listening to the market, knowing how many orders are clipping the book, and it doesn't tell me anything about the market other than there's more sells than buys.
And that's a cue where you would then pay closer attention to the
dom. I'm gonna pay closer attention to what's going on.
Like, if sounds so important to your trading, I'm aware that you do have a Discord or had a Discord where perhaps you're mentoring some traders. Do you give them insights to their process and prompt them to at least enable sounds to monitor the market, or do you mainly just guide them in whatever strategy they're evolving?
I try to help them any way I can. There's not one perfect approach to being a successful trader. I mean, you know, there are some people that use charts and, you know, they're successful. Who am I to tell them, you know, whether that's right or wrong? I don't know the answer to that. I know the process that works for me. What I can help traders with, or, you know, is it doesn't matter on any scale any trader trades. We've all had really good days and we've all had really bad days. We've all gone through bad streaks. So I try to talk to traders, you know, through that process. Like, when something's going wrong for them, what's going wrong? Well, why is it going wrong? Did you change anything? Are you being more or less aggressive? Are you are you trading too big? Are you trading too close to economic numbers? And I just like talking them through that process, because I've had a lot of streaks. I've had some insane winning streaks in my life, and I've had some really big losing days that would just make you sick to your stomach, because, you know, I thought I was bigger and better than the market. And newsflash, you never are.
Well, the mentoring aspect, and I've touched on this before, and I know on Band of Traders podcast, I've talked about it with them. It's a key component usually to traders being able to work through the process of becoming successful, having someone to point out obvious things like that. Like, are you going on tilt? Are you trading around numbers? And yeah, it's pretty generous of you to assist these new guys trying to make it in the markets. Are you an advocate of trading drills? Do you have any that you'd suggest to new traders?
You know, so we could touch on the prop shops that are out there. You know, I wasn't a fan of them at first. Look, everyone has to make money how they make money. I'm not judging that. I wasn't a fan of the prop shops at first. But the longer I've been around them, and obviously I partnered with one of them, but the longer I've been around them, people can make real money, you know, trading through these guys. My issue with them has always been the trader's not in control of the money. And a lot of these firms, there are some very good firms out there, and there are some shady firms out there. My problem has always been, if a trader earns that money, I can't stand when the firm changes rules and avoids paying them out. I have an issue with that. It's like, hey, look, it's hard enough to make money trading. Said trader played within your rules. Here are your rules, and a trader played within them. And now you're denying them a payout. It's like, well, you know, on this one day, you added on a contract here. You're not allowed to do that. Or on this one day, you traded too close to a number. We're not paying you out. That really irritates me. But, I mean, other than that, I think they're great for building up capital. I would always suggest to any new trader, open up one account and get one account home. Whatever firm it may be, I don't care if you use, you know, I You know, I work with TradeFunder. I don't care if you use TradeFunder or any other firm that's out there. Focus on one account. Perfect your process. Then open up more accounts. Receive a payout and then reinvest. And then it's a free roll. Like, who cares? Like, I mean, I've seen some of the payouts on some of these firms. Good for those traders if they can clear seven figures. You know, it's a free roll. You know, those guys just aren't going in and requesting a seven-figure payout. They probably got paid out one or two times, you know, significant amount of money, probably 70 to 150K, something along those lines. And some of them have, you know, for the stones to just say, you know what, go big or go home here. This is a complete free roll for me. I've already took firm X for, you know, 150,000. I want 150,000. I want a million here. And if I lose everything, I still turn my original, whatever, $2,000 or $3,000 investment into 150K. You can, I mean, who can blame? Can't blame the trader for that. But I've seen a lot of traders get denied on those big payouts as well. And that's irritating to me. It's like, hey, look, these guys built up the equity in their accounts. They're trading. And you guys are playing the rules that they can put a five lot on across 10 or 20 accounts in the NQ, which we all know wouldn't be filled in the real market now without significantly affecting it, 100 lot. But a five lot per account that you guys allow to copy trade, those traders should get paid on that.
So with these firms, I mean, I'm aware your son trades and you've witnessed him run into these issues as well.
My son made money. I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to name the firm, but he made money on a few of the accounts he took payouts from. One of the firms invited him to be on their web show. And, you know, I guess my issue with all of it has been I'm a scalper. I don't hold trades. Look, I know it's the bond. So while I think I'm in a trade for 10 to 15 seconds, it's the 30-year bond. I'm sure I do get some trades that are that quick, especially scratches. I can be in and out in under a second or two. That's fine. You know, but typically my trades are probably, you know, a minute. You know, that I'm trying to catch a turn. I buy 12s. And I'm like, okay, I got my order in ready at 13. And, you know, I'm sure there are times that I think it takes 10 seconds to fill the order. But then when you really look at time and sales, it was like a minute 30 on the trade, something along those lines. But I'm a scalper. I'm a one-tick guy. That's the way I taught my son how to trade. He is a scalper, and he is currently scalping the 30-year bond. He uses TT, and, I mean, he doesn't do anything big. He scalps 2 and 4 lots. I don't let him go bigger than that right now. And, you know, I say, you know, 500 to 1,000 a day. That's what you're after. Give me four, you know, like if you're doing a 4 lot and you make, if you get 8 trades on the day and you finish plus 8, that's a great day. You're 19 years old. You made $1,000 in the market. That's phenomenal.
However, for a lot of traders, commissions are the big obstacle to being a scalper. And you're a member of the Chicago Board of Trade, is that right?
Yeah, I have a CBOT membership, so yes. I say this to people all the time. I would be bankrupt if I paid retail rates through my career. I don't trade nearly as much as I did. You know, I'm going to say my peak year, I probably did 5 million round turns at my peak.
Wow.
I'm not close to that anymore. I'm probably in the 1 to 2-ish million a year now. Yeah, I'm significantly lower, but that's based on a lot of things. I don't like trading more than 3 hours a day, to be honest. 3 to 4 hours. Come on, I'm older. I'm 50 years old now. Like, you know, back when I was 35 or 40, you know, sitting in front of the screen 16 hours a day didn't bother me. I don't have time to sit in front of the screen 16 hours a day anymore to constantly trade all day. constantly know what the markets are doing. I just don't care anymore. Like, I every day when I'm done, I'm flat. I do not carry positions anymore. I used to love doing it, you know, in the Fed funds especially. I would have positions on for weeks and months at a time. But now, I don't want to do that. I mean, in the bonds, I probably do. If I'm scalping 20 lots, I'm probably about 1,000 round turns on the day, give or take.
Are the online props offering commissions that would allow?
No. Everyone's different. I mean, obviously, the firm that went under, I knew they had zero in commissions. And, you know, one of the bigger mistakes I made was having my son do that firm. He received two smallish payouts. He walked away flush on that whole thing, but he had gotten like 6,000 in payouts from them. And I said, go all in by 20 more, you know, by 19 more accounts. And that was the last time he got paid. But all in all, he was fine on that. But I realized what a good deal that was. I'm like, look, if you're paying zero commissions and they're allowing you to scalp, who cares if you do 300 turns a day? Because you're paying zero in commissions. Most of these firms, I want to say the last one he was at, I know who he has an account with still. I think they're $5 a turn. I mean, I'd go broke at $5 a turn.
You're really going to have to be playing short-term swings or something.
Sure, you would have to. You'd have to be holding for 2 to 3 ticks to make that work. I mean, and most of these online firms now, I mean, they limit the amount of contracts you can do. Whether you have a 50,000 or I don't even know what they go up to. All firms are different, but they let you have like 5 or 10 contracts, something like that. Somebody asked me not too long ago, could you make it with 10,000 without a membership? And I said, the answer to that question is no, I would not make it. If I had a membership in 10,000, you'd have to adjust your size, but yeah, ultimately I could get it up to 100,000, but it wouldn't be a fast process because, you know, with 10,000 in your account, I think your max inventory would be 10. That means you can only trade, you know, let's say you're scalping 5 lots.
Yeah, what's the maths on that?
Well, it's 156 a tick, 156.25 a tick. And it's just not that much money. No, it is. You know, I mean, hey, if you got 8 winners a day, but it's a lot different when you only have 10,000 in your account. Like, I don't keep a ton in my account anymore, but I have enough that if I have a $5,000 losing day, my account doesn't bother me. But, you know, if you have 10,000 in your account and you have a bad day, say you lose $1,000, you just lost 10% of your account. That's going to, that psychologically, that's going to affect you as a trader.
A lot of these guys in your trade funder group, and I wonder how much capital they're turning up with. Like when I was trading the Euro bonds, I entered trading with over 10K to just risk. And I get the feeling through correspondence that many traders are massively undercapitalized to achieve success based on these numbers that we're talking about. So how, say someone has 10K that they're willing to have a crack at the markets with, what would your advice be to them?
I'd tell them to open up with the online prop firms. I mean, the bang for your buck there is just too good. Just, take any one of them. You know, you could probably get a $50,000 account for $100. So now there's steps. Like, you got to make X amount. I think you got to make $3,000. And then you advance to stage 2, and there might be another fee on top of that now. But the thing is you can pull out $2,000. And what's your risk? Well, your risk is $200. You blow the account. Well, no, let's say your risk is $100, because if you don't get to stage 2, your risk is only $100. So you blow out an account, you take a $50,000 account, and you lose $2,500. You lost $100 real money. That's all you lost. You didn't lose anything else. And that doesn't really affect your, you know, your $10,000. You still have $9,900. So my advice would be to open up like six accounts, you know, do two at one, you know, it just research the firms that are out there. There are some very solid firms in the space that do not have payout issues. And it's good, you know, it's good for the space. And those invest in those firms that pay out. And then, you know, you pick up like $8,000 to $10,000. Okay, now you got 20. The ultimate goal should be you backing yourself, but I don't think you can back yourself in the S&P with $10,000. I'll be upfront right now. If you gave me $10,000 and said, Jeff, you have to trade, you got to take 10 to 100 in the S&P. That's the only market you can do. I would say 90% it's going to hit zero before it hits 100,000. The odds would be weighed heavily against me. Whereas I do think I would do it in the bonds based on my skill set. But again, I need a membership. Without a membership, there's zero chance of me doing it in the bonds because I would trade too much. It's like even at four lots, I'd be 200 aside. If I'm paying retail rates, let's just call it $2 a turn. And I'm being generous there. $2 a turn on 200 a day. I'm minus 400 to start the day. So even if I finished $1,000 on the day, I only netted $600. And that doesn't include the cost of TT and your office. So
the bottom line would eat that up pretty quick.
Right. But it could be done. I could do it in the bonds. I could not do it. I would not bet on myself to do it in the NQ or ES.
3 to 4 hours a day in the bonds?
I prefer to trade the bonds basically 10 to 1 Chicago time. 9:30, you know, sometimes I'll stay to the 2 o'clock close. Depends how my day goes. But the type of trader I am now, I'm super aggressive. I'm click happy. And while I'll say my average size is 20, you know, per se, let's say my average size is 20. And that's actually true. If I see a trade I really like, I'll click three times. So I'll have 60 on.
You'll size up pretty quick.
I'll size up when I can.
And you're nearly always just looking for that tick.
Just one tick. I mean, I've said this multiple times. I'm just not smart enough to know where the market's going to be 5 minutes from now, let alone, you know, 10 or 30. You know, I've said this before in the bonds. I did a mega thread on this. The thread still exists in my Discord. And I don't know how many people still trade bonds anymore in life. There's five levels I look at in the bonds at every handle. It's 12, 22, and 28. And then the secondary numbers are 03 and 18. And I do all my scalping those five numbers in mind.
How often will you hit in, or you're always getting filled on the bid or offer using your unique skill set?
Okay, so I do not use resting orders at all. Even if I miss, the only time when I miss that I'll leave an order out there is probably during the calendar spread when I know I'm in like the back months. So, you know, the next spread is going to be June SEP. You know, we're going to roll into SEP bonds and at the end of May here. I'll leave an order out there in SEP because I know I'm first on it or something, you know, along those effects. But typically, too many things have changed when I trade that I have found that if I say I'm trying to buy the 12s, I know I always use 12, 13. So say I go to pay 12 for 20, I try to lift the offer, and I get a piece of it. I get a one lot. Let's just say I get a one lot. And I have an TT as a OCO, so OCO immediately puts in one at 13. Let's just say it rips 13 bid right away. Doesn't trade 12s back. So now I'm first on the 12 bid. I'm first on those that 12 bid 19 times. We go up to 15, 16. We're trading there. Inevitably, what I have found, it happens by the time we get back down to 12, so many variables have changed. I don't know what, you know, it depends what's the 10-year ultra doing. Even though I don't look at them, what's the 10-year doing? What's the 5-year done? What's cash markets have done? There's so many variables that change. What inevitably happens to me, or I have found that happens to me, is it will go down, it's 12, 13, and it'll be 1,000 on the bid and maybe 100 on the offer. Nobody trades 12. So you're like, what the hell? Somebody just sell a 10 lot. You know, give me an easy one here. And then all of a sudden it kind of evens out. It's 12, 13, maybe 800 versus 600. You're like, okay, nobody's really doing anything at 12. Next thing you know, they hit 400 at 12 and it's offered. And I'm like, then I'm caught with my, you know, I'm like, well, what are you doing? Like, you're waiting for somebody to fill you. I don't like being a passive trader. This isn't like an algo market like the Fed funds or the 2-year back in the day. If I knew somebody was selling 100 lot at an exact second and I loved that bid or offer, or, you know, like if somebody were buying 100 lot, if I loved the offer, if somebody was hitting a bid and I love that other side, yeah, I'm going to quote it because I have an advantage doing that. I know the exact second that order is coming in. And I'm going to use my inventory to my advantage. And out of that 100 lot, I'm going to pick up 30 to 40 contracts. Good for me. It's an edge. But it's not how it really works in the bonds. I want to be the aggressor in the bonds, not a passive. I don't want to be a passive buyer or seller.
So you really sound like you're cued into that micro level momentum, which, as we've talked about, sound is a key component of that. Would you agree with that?
Right. Which is why I use sound so much. Like, as you get older, as I am, like, look, my eyesight's not as sharp as it was. I'm not as alert as I was 10 years ago. I'm not on top of my game like I was 15 years ago. So I need to help create any edge I can get. And sound, I can always hear everything. I've said this multiple times, like, you know, my eyes deceive me, my ears never do. If I hear something, I know it's for fact that it went through the market. I'm not going to listen to... Some people I know, you can make sound alerts for when the bid and offers change. That's not going to help me at all. Like, I'm not interested in that. I am only interested in what is a fact. And the fact is, hey, I heard 14, 25 or larger orders clip the book. So based on sound, I know the order was between 25 and 49. So the exact quantity is irrelevant to me, though my eyes are going to look and say, well, what is it? Because the quantity does matter based on, I know there's certain orders that clip the book during the day that will sell 25 lots in a certain time frame. I mean, years ago in the 2-year, I've shared this on, you know, the band of the other podcasts, that if I saw an order at 7:25 in the morning in the 2-year, I could tell you the next 49 orders to the exact millisecond when they were going to execute. To the exact millisecond. Well, that's a significant advantage to me. I know the next 49 times that guy's going to sell 100 lot the exact second. We're not playing a FIFO market. We're playing a KLGO market. I know there's 60 contracts that are float, 40 contracts go to the top of the, you know, whoever's first in the line of queue, you know, based on the percentages, but 60 contracts go to the biggest orders. Well, what if when that 100 lot is going off, there's, say, 2,000 on the bid, but I love the bid. Like, I want to get long. I'll flood the bid and I'll pick up 50 contracts, or that's what I used to do. And I would be out there 1 second. The second the order clicked. And then, boom, I'm immediately canceled. Well, that's playing the game within the rules. That's not doing anything illegal. You're allowed to quote to get a piece of the order. It's part of the, you're allowed to do it. So yep. I just played the game that they provided the rules. I played within the rules.
Do you think there's any other areas, untapped areas where sound could be used for monitoring the markets? We know size is well known. Any other data points where you think audio could play a role?
Yeah, I mean, if people were paying attention, look, I actually think sound would be a huge thing in the ES and NQ. I'm past my prime, and I dabble in those markets from time to time, but to say I'm a successful either one of those traders, I'm not. I do use sound in gold. I trade gold. You know, while I say I only trade bonds from 10 to 3, there's a lot of time. I'm in my office at 7:30 most mornings. And I trade gold from 7:30 until 9 a.m. I use sound in gold. Different kind of sound, like the orders are way different because you don't see any 50 or 100 lots going through in gold. So, you know, I adjust. You know, I think I only have like 3 sound levels. I have like 5 to 9, 10 to 20, it's 5 to 9, and then I do 10 to 24 and 25 and up. Just 3 sound levels.
At one point, you were monitoring well over a dozen markets, but what would cue you into turning the sounds on in gold when you're usually turning up to scalp the bonds?
Oh, so why would I do that? Why do I use it in gold?
Well, we know why you use sounds per se. However, you know, it's quite easy, and we found this with Price Squawk, for traders to have too many sounds going on.
Oh, so when I'm trading gold, I don't listen to the bond sounds. I'm not interested in the bond sounds from so I have different screens, you know, set up for how I trade. So I have a scalping bond screen, and as soon as I open that screen, everything's memorized, you know, like it has everything exactly how I want it laid out. My time and sales laid out perfectly. My sound levels laid perfectly. When I trade gold, unfortunately with gold, I do need to use charts. Even though I still look at the Dom, you know, I still look at the ladder. I'm very aware of the size of bid and offers. But I want to hear sound because gold moves so fast. I mean, I'm not a scalper in gold. I am a position trader in gold to a degree. I try to only have my trades 3 to 5 minutes. Unless I get a runner, what I've become very good at is holding a one lot in gold. And if it's like $3 for me, I'll put a stop at like entry and I'll just walk away. And there's some days like I've caught a one lot in gold and it goes like $12 for me. And on a one lot, that's $1,200. And I just go, I'm not even going to trade bonds today. I made 4,000, you know, I picked up 4 grand in gold. I'm not even going to scalp bonds today. Like I got my goal for the day. Like I'm happy. I just leave.
That makes sense. So sound.
I like talking about sound. I don't think enough people really use it. I mean, we've had many private conversations about sound, how I use it, you know, everything. You know, it's a tool. It's a tool for every trader. I think it's a very important tool. Like a lot of people use, what are those, like Squawk services?
Well, there's RAN, Squawk.
Yeah, like
traders.
Yeah, they use them. Well, why do they use them? Well, because those guys are telling you something. Well, sounds tell you different things. It gives you different information. But the orders that clip the book give you a significant picture, you know, paints a significant picture in the market. They absolutely do. And I mean, why do I talk so much about the bonds and the 2-year? Well, that's where I spent the majority of my career trading. So they're just things I know in those markets that the sound tells me what's going on. So if I hear a certain, I talk about the 25 to 49 the most, because that's a very common order that I look for in the bonds. I know based on certain, you know, just from being in the screen as long as I have, that when I hear those orders and I hear that sound, and then I see a certain quantity, I know this guy isn't done on the day. I know he's going to go multiple times during the day, and I can have a very good guesstimate. I can't get it to the exact millisecond, like back in the 2 year, but I know when they're going to move the contracts within a couple minutes. And as soon as I see that first one, now I use that to my advantage. So if I hear that we're selling, let's just say those 25 lots again, and he executes, let's just make up the time, 9 a.m., there's no economic numbers. I'm going to know at 10:44, this guy's going to come in again. And as soon as I hear that first order, well, now I know he's going to do 24 more. And based on that information, I'm going to change my approach to scalping, because I heard the order right away. I don't even need to look at the quantity around those times, because I already know what the quantity is. And now I'm looking, hey, does it make sense to sell, or does it make sense to go with this guy? Do I want to quote? Do I want to try to get long with him? You know, like if he's selling into the bid, and I'm looking around, I'm like, God, the bids are strong here. I want to get long. I'm going to buy this guy as he's selling into it. Or I know he's going to sell so many. Is the market thin enough where I can sell a 50 lot, try to take it sellers, have everyone add on, and I know immediately this guy's going to sell into the next price? Well, there's only like 800 on numbers in the bonds, and somebody selling 10, 25 lots, that's, you know, one third of the bids already gone that I know. And now some people might be BSing on their bid. They don't really want it. So now I moved up another 100 contracts. So now I'm like 450 down. I'm like, okay, now I'll let the market play. And guess what? The spoos just spiked up. You know, who knows? The spoos spiked. Now there's more pressure on the bonds. And that bid goes down to 250. And I'm like, okay, it's a matter of time. It doesn't matter if I'm 50 of the 250. I can be the last. I know there's 7 more 25 lots coming, 8 more 25 lots coming. I'm going to catch time on this, and I'm going to flip this quick 50 lot. And why was it? Because it's sound. You know, the sound alerted me to that.
It's fair to say that sort of a playbook you've developed over a very long career. As a closing remark, do you have any advice to traders who have been around for under a year? Like what have you seen in Trade Funder and the traders that you've been working with that would give you the best advice for those that are trying to make it in this game?
You know what? Sometimes you have to think outside the box. And I think so many traders nowadays are focused on ES and NQ because that's the big rage. Like, and I understand why people trade them. Most of the YouTube traders, that's all they trade are equities. And, you know, that's where a lot of the newer traders, you know, watch. They watch YouTube traders. And those guys are, look, some of them make a lot of money doing what they do, and good for them. I would think outside the box that there are other markets you can make money in that aren't as volatile as ES and NQ, especially NQ. I mean, NQ is a hard trade. I haven't been very successful. You know, I've had my moments in it, but, you know, overall, I'm a nothing trader in ES and NQ. I don't pretend I'm anything other than that. But I can help people in those markets just with their mindset and how they approach the market every day. Like, every trader should know when they make the most money. Like, I know in the bonds, I know this is going to be a little longer now in the closing remarks, but I can go back like certain years in my career that during, you know, a certain time frame, say 2010 to 2013, well, I made most of my money between 6 a.m. and the 7:20 open, and then 1 to 2 p.m. Those were my most profitable hours. So I was always make sure I would be on point there, you know, always in front of the screen. And I would take breaks around like 10, 45, 11 when I know it was slower. And typically my day wasn't as good then. Traders should have stats like that on hand to help improve their trading. Like, do you guys trade well around the open? Or would you prefer the market? Like, I used to love trading opens and open and closes. They used to be my most profitable. There were years that I could just, you'd be astounded what I could do on the open and close during the day in the 2 year. Like, I could make my whole day off 3 minutes. So I think traders need to be aware of, don't chase, don't run to the end of the rainbow and find that pot of gold. Get good at one or two markets. And preferably when you trade one market at a time. I know I talk about multiple markets. I'll trade bonds. I'll trade the 10-year ultra. I'll trade gold. I do not have positions on in multiple markets anymore. If I'm trading bonds, I'm trading bonds. That's the only market I trade. If I want to switch to gold because I saw something on a chart, you know, or I switch to gold and I have nothing on in the bonds.
Well, that's some solid advice and extremely generous of you. Are traders still able to find you through TradeFunder or?
If anyone wants to reach out to me, I still have X up. I monitor. I'm just not posting there right now. I do post in my Discord because my Discord's locked and nobody can. But just ask me for an invite to the Discord. I'll give it to you. There's no charge to be in my Discord. And, you know, if anyone wants to sign up through TradeFunder, anyone who signed up for TradeFunder, you know, everyone gets, you know, open up an account. I'll give you a 30-minute to an hour phone call. We can talk about things. And, you know, we've sent a few traders, you know, more than a few traders live through TradeFunder. They get 10,000 in their name in their account. It's definitely not a... You're not going to be able to sim farm TradeFunder because they're going to move you too fast. But if you're interested in being backed for, you know, with real capital, 10,000, your name, it's a good firm to be at.
Well, we'll certainly put a link in the podcast notes and in our email campaign to that can point traders to find you. And thank you so much, Jeff. I've been trying to get your word on trading and market sounds for quite a while, and you've definitely shared some gold for those that are new to trading and using sound in their trading or interested in it. So I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with 2 Year Flipper. If you're intrigued by how audio cues might enhance your own trading, like Jeff described, I'd like to introduce you to PriceSquawk, the market sonification platform that transforms real-time market data into audio signals. Whether you're monitoring multiple markets simultaneously, looking to reduce screen fatigue, or searching for that extra edge in your trading, PriceSquawk allows you to literally hear market movements the moment they happen. Our platform offers customizable alerts similar to what Jeff described, allowing you to set different sounds for various order sizes, market movements, following price action, and more. To learn more about PriceSquawk and how it might fit into your trading workflow, visit PriceSquawk.com or try out the app at app.PriceSquawk.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the Sound Trader podcast wherever you get your podcasts. In upcoming episodes, we'll be speaking with more traders who are using innovative approaches to gain their edge in the markets. Until next time, this is Graham. reminding you that sometimes the most valuable market signals aren't seen, they're heard.